Hello, it is Ryan, and I was on a flight the other day playing one of my favorite social spin slot games on ChumbaCasino.com. I looked over the person sitting next to me, and you know what they were doing? They were also playing Chumba Casino. Coincidence? I think not. Everybody's loving having fun with it. Chumba Casino is home to hundreds of casino-style games that you can play for free anytime, anywhere, even at 30,000 feet. So sign up now at ChumbaCasino.com to claim your free welcome bonus. That's ChumbaCasino.com and live the Chumba life.
No purchase necessary. VGW. Void where prohibited by law. See terms and conditions. 18 plus.
Just a heads up, there's some swearing in this episode. All right, here's the show.
It doesn't even make any sense! I'm the eldest boy!
Does this scenario sound familiar? The children of a billionaire battle it out for control of his empire and for his love and attention. The stakes? Massive influence over U.S. democracy. Well, that's the plot of HBO's popular drama Succession, of course. And it's also sort of what happened in the real world recently. Earlier this month, 92-year-old George Soros announced that one of his sons would step in to run George's foundation and his super PAC. The Soros heir apparent is 37-year-old Alex Soros, and it should be noted, he is not the eldest boy, to borrow Kendall Roy's term from the show. So I called up Gregory Zuckerman to see what he thought about this. He recently interviewed Alex Soros for the Wall Street Journal.
It's been on my radar screen for a while because I cover Wall Street. I write about big players like George Soros. I've been wondering for a long time, where is the empire going? He's 92 years old. And Alex is a bit of a surprise as a choice.
A surprise choice because, according to Gregory, many people, both inside and outside the firm, had expected another son to one day take the helm. But George is notoriously fickle. As a trader, that's where he made his billions, he was known for changing his mind quickly. Sound familiar?
Fuck off. Fuck off.
Fuck off.
And according to Gregory, while it may not be a perfect comparison, there are a lot of similarities between this story and the Roys.
Yeah, this is a real-life Succession story with a lot of drama and surprise, much like the television show. And yet, again, it's real life. So for years, the assumption was among people working in the Soros Foundation, among others, that Jonathan, his son from his first marriage, would be the one, would be the heir apparent, the one to succeed George Soros. And when we say succeed George Soros, we're talking about atop this empire, which is his foundation, it's his hedge funds, it's his PAC, all of which are very influential and groundbreaking. And Jonathan, for many good reasons, was expected to be the one, the chosen one. And yet there was a falling out. There was a change of heart on the part of George Soros. And Jonathan took a step back. He said, you know what? I want to keep peace in the family. So I'm going to take a step back from the investment firm, but I still want to be the one to run the foundation in some way. And George said, no, you're not the one. And it created an opening and allowed the younger son, Alex, to have the potential to step up and be the heir apparent.
So today on the show, Succession in real life, and what the passing of the torch within the Soros empire says about who gets to wield power in the United States, and what that power does. I'm Emily Peck, filling in for Lizzie O'Leary, and this is What Next TBD, a show about tech, power, and how the future will be determined. Stick around.
Apple Card is the perfect cashback rewards credit card. You earn up to 3% daily cash on every purchase every day. That's 3% on your favorite products at Apple, 2% on all other Apple Card with Apple Pay purchases, and 1% on anything you buy with your titanium Apple Card or virtual card number. Visit apple.co/cardcalculator to see how much you can earn. Apple Card issued by Goldman Sachs Bank, USA, Salt Lake City branch. Subject to credit approval. Terms apply.
With Lucky Land Slots, you can get lucky just about anywhere.
Dearly beloved, we are gathered here today to... Has anyone seen the bride and groom?
Sorry, we're here. We were getting lucky in the limo and we lost track of time.
No, Lucky Land Casino, with cash prizes that add up quicker than a guest registry.
In that case, I pronounce you lucky.
Play for free at LuckyLandSlots.com. Daily bonuses are waiting. No purchase necessary. Void where prohibited by law. 18 plus. Terms and conditions apply. See website for details.
To understand this shift, it's helpful to understand who Alex Soros is.
He was born on third base. He was born, you know, in between third and home, frankly. His father is worth tens of billions of dollars. Yes, he got a PhD, Alex, but he was sort of handed a lot on a silver platter. Now, that said, we shouldn't necessarily judge him harshly just as a result. Early on in his life, for many years, he was only known for being on the gossip pages. Page mm-hmm. Six featured him. He dated models. He was courtside at New York Knicks games. He still is, frankly. So that's kind of what he was best known for. And even within the foundation, so he went and starting to work there full time in 2015. But for years, he worked part time there, and he didn't really make much of an impression. People mm-hmm. I talked to say that in meetings, he hardly spoke up. So he starts off with some skepticism about him. But I don't think we should rush to judgment. Yes, we have reason to be skeptical of someone born into billions who's given an important mandate in life, an important job. But we also should hold out the possibility that he's a hardworking individual in his own right and serious-minded. And yes, you could be in page six one day and then also be serious and on the ground in a European country working hard on some cause the next.
You said Soros is influential, and you know, you hear his name batted around by the right and by conservatives, but what do you mean when you say he's influential?
So George Soros is a fascinating character. He's not nearly as influential as some on the right will suggest, and yet he is among the more important characters, individuals, both in the world of politics and finance in modern times. I say that because he's a groundbreaking investor, really more of a speculator even than an investor. He's bet on currencies, governments, stocks, bonds for years, and has had this really important, influential role on Wall Street, groundbreaking. People have followed in his footsteps in terms of being a speculator and a trader. And as a hedge fund manager, people have compared themselves to him. His track record is among the best, and he's just moved markets for years. And then he shifted gears to be a philanthropist, and his foundation is among the biggest in the world. And as such, it's played important roles in countries, including ours, but in Europe, in Latin America as well.
Important role doing what?
So they funded all kinds of important institutions, educational institutions. They've provided funding for individuals, people like in Hungary, the prime minister there, he got a scholarship to go to Oxford due to the Soros Foundation. They provide funding for different organizations, BLM, European organizations. They've been among the most important funders of local elections for district attorneys and others in our country. So both in the United States and abroad, they've played a really important role.
It's my understanding that George Soros, he grew up in occupied Hungary and hid out from the Nazis, and that was a formidable experience for him. And sort of when it comes to his philanthropic thesis, it kind of plays into it, right? Open society, he supports democracy. So it's like his background influences his giving and his foundation, all of that. For someone like Alex, who's born not in those circumstances, into privilege, do you have a sense for what his thesis would be, how he would change the focus, if he would change the focus of the foundation?
Broadly speaking, Alex is center-left, is the way he describes himself. He is a liberal. He's a progressive. He'll continue to give to causes. He's younger, too. So things like gender rights mean a lot more to Alex than to his father. Things like abortion rights. He said he's going to help candidates that are fighting for abortion rights in the United States. Those kind of issues are much more important to Alex. He's younger as a result, but I don't think we should kind of categorize him as your traditional necessarily progressive or liberal. I think he's much more, he stresses more, he cares much more about free speech on college campuses and elsewhere. He calls himself something of a Bill Maher Democrat. He's been influenced by Bill Maher. And as a result, free speech means a lot more to him.
One thing I also found striking in your reporting, it seems as though Alex wasn't very close to his father, to George, growing up, but that was something he really longed for. And maybe part of the reason he wanted to be in the foundation, I mean, it all boils down to just wanting to be close to his father and be loved.
Yeah, it's a really important observation. And what I love about the story is, frankly, you've got different elements involved. Yeah, you got the future of this country and the world and Democratic politicians and whether the Soros will be as supportive in the future as they've been. They've been among the most important Democratic backers over the last few decades. But there's also the human element of it. You've got this young, relatively young, 37-year-old who has spent a life looking up to his father and wanting a relationship with his father, wanting to be closer to his father and struggling in that regard. Early on, for many years growing up, his father, and this is how he describes it, his father was there but not there. Yeah, he was present, but his mind was on Wall Street, was on trading, was on speculating. And here's a young man who longed to be closer to his father. And he couldn't get his father interested in the kinds of things he was interested in. That was hip hop, that was sports, those kind of things. And frankly, Alex grew up a little bit insecure in terms of people were trying to take advantage of him. Here was a guy who was a little bit insecure in terms of his reputation and his family and wanted to be close to his father. He finally found a way. And that was through ideas and thoughts and philosophy. And he tended towards philosophy. And that's why he went to school and graduate school in that regard. He realized that it wasn't the only reason, but one of the reasons was that his father is a philosopher in his own right, a frustrated philosopher, frankly. He always kind of wanted to be taken more seriously for his philosophy and his approach to life. So becoming more active in the foundation and eventually leading it and becoming the successor was also a way for Alex to be closer to his father.
George Soros made his money as a trader, and his son Jonathan cut his teeth in finance. Alex, by all accounts, doesn't share the same interest.
I mean, George Soros is among the most gifted traders and speculators in history, and he still, frankly, steps in once in a while. He's 92 years old, but he'll still follow markets. He'll still call over to his investment firm and make recommendations, and sometimes they're pretty good ones. He's a savvy, sharp trader, and his son, Jonathan, also had that interest in finance, interest in trading, and ability there as well. That's not Alex. Alex can tell you about the quarterback for the New York Jets. He can give you a lot of insight into football, into basketball, and to broad changes in society and philosophy. Those are the kind of things he's interested in, philosophy, sports, hip-hop, but he's not interested like his brother or nearly like his father in markets and trading and speculating. So it's a new era on Wall Street.
Jonathan Soros, the youngest son of his first marriage, was long considered by people internally to be the one to take over for his father. But after a disagreement between the two, George seemed to sour on him.
He told me he was disappointed, but I wouldn't say he was crushed. He, to his credit, moved on and he's developed his own life. He's got a family, he's got a business, he's got interests, public interests. So I think it was the kind of thing where, yeah, Jonathan was disappointed at not being the heir apparent, but not crushed. But that did give Alex an opening.
Okay. So he's not Kendall Roy sitting on the bench, staring at the river, contemplating his own death.
I would not describe him. So yeah, there are similarities to success, but they're not always exact parallels, yes.
When we come back, will Alex become the new boogeyman for the right?
This episode is brought to you by Progressive Insurance. Hey, listeners, whether you love true crime or comedies, celebrity interviews, news, or even motivational speakers, you call the shots on what's in your podcast queue, right? And guess what? Now you can call the shots on your auto insurance, too. Enter the Name Your Price tool from Progressive. The Name Your Price tool puts you in charge of your auto insurance by working just the way it sounds. You tell Progressive how much you want to pay for car insurance. Then they'll show you a variety of coverages that fit within your budget, giving you options. Now, that's something you'll want to press play on. It's easy to start a quote, and you'll be able to choose the best option for you fast. It's just one of the many ways you can save with Progressive Insurance. Quote today at progressive.com to try the Name Your Price tool for yourself and join over 28 million drivers who trust Progressive. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. Price and coverage match limited by state law.
Hi, I'm Jeremy Stahl. I'm Slate's jurisprudence editor. Ordinarily, I edit our courts and legal coverage from the comfort of my home office in Los Angeles, but for the next month and a half, I will be locked in a lower Manhattan courtroom with the rest of the press, a jury of 12 New Yorkers, Justice Juan Merchan, prosecutors, Trump's defense team, and the former president himself as history unfolds. I've temporarily moved myself and my family from Los Angeles to New York to cover this case firsthand, like I have done in other cases, including the Paul Manafort case, the Roger Stone criminal trial, and Donald Trump's first impeachment. I'm hoping that my background knowledge of the many, many criminal travails of our former president can offer something to you, Slate's listener. Over the next several weeks, you'll be hearing from me on Amicus, Slate's legal podcast, and in articles on Slate.com, from the jury selection to the opening arguments to the witness testimony and cross-examination and the prosecution's case and the defense's case, and ultimately to a final verdict. We will be providing you wall-to-wall coverage throughout the entirety of the trial as it unfolds from the courtroom. There's no way I'd be able to do it without the support of Slate Plus. So if you're not already a subscriber, please join today by clicking Try Free at the top of the Amicus show page on Apple Podcasts or visit slate.com/amicusplus to get access wherever you listen. Thank you so, so much.
If you want to understand what is happening in the United States right now, you really need to understand what's happening with the courts, the law, and the Supreme Court. The battle between democracy and whatever this cage match is that we're witnessing, it's going to be won and lost at the ballot box, but it's also going to be won and lost in the courtrooms. I'm Dahlia Lithwick. I host Slate's legal podcast, Amicus, and we are doubling our output, bringing you weekly episodes from here on in, because how else can we keep an eye on the many trials of Donald Trump, the conservative legal movement's assaults on our rights, the Supreme Court's latest slate of environmental gutting, gun safety eviscerating cases on the docket? So follow Amicus wherever you get your podcasts, new episodes dropping every Saturday morning.
If you're familiar with George Soros, you're aware of the attacks levied against him on the right. Most of it is pure conspiracy theory, that he's the puppet master of the world, pulling the strings of the elites behind closed doors. A lot of it is blatantly, horrifyingly anti-Semitic. Soros lived through the Holocaust in hiding, it's worth emphasizing. But all that noise makes it harder to talk about Soros' actual wealth and power, and that is, of course, why these attacks happen. Elon Musk recently compared Soros to Magneto, a supervillain from the X-Men comic books, who is also a Holocaust survivor. Musk's tweet was hard not to see as grossly anti-Semitic.
So George Soros has been attacked. He's been demonized even by the right. The question is why? Partly it's because we need demons today, unfortunately, or it just seems like many on both sides like to demonize as opposed to just disagree and criticize. So it's not enough to say that you disagree with George Soros's efforts and what he finds important, which is the level of incarceration. Incarceration rates in this country is very high, and that's bothered George Soros for years. And as a result, he has for years, early before others, seized on the importance of electing local officials, local district attorney officials, law enforcement officials and such. And he's gotten behind his efforts to elect liberal, progressive law officials and district attorneys. And that's something that the right disagrees with. But they've gone overboard, I would argue, in terms of demonizing him. They call him the puppet master. They say that he's installed district attorneys and others, local officials around the country, which is overstating things. He has backed these elections, but frankly, a lot of these district attorneys and others have been elected and sometimes reelected by voters.
And do you think passing the torch to Alex will tamper down some of this criticism, or will Alex just sort of like just become another target, or has he already?
So George Soros is an easy target. He's a financier. He's a Wall Street guy. He's a multi-billionaire. And he's not even an investor, frankly. He's a speculator. He'll acknowledge he speculated his whole life. Those aren't the kinds of people that we love to support and are easy to wrap our arms around. He's not some long-term investor even. And he's frankly put pressure on governments around the world. He helped put pressure on the British pound and it collapsed. And he would say, and others who are backers of Soros and friends will say, well, the British pound, we're talking 1992, by the way, the British pound was going to collapse anyway. But yeah, he helped accelerate the process. He's an immigrant. He's Jewish. He's an easy target for a lot of people. But, you know, both on the right and some on the left. And his son is not nearly the same kind of target. He's not this boogeyman, puppet master, immigrant who's been responsible for helping to accelerate the collapse of global currencies. So he may not be the same easy target for those on the right. But that said, Alex will be at the helm of this $25 billion organization that has in the past and will continue to support some of the more progressive liberal causes in this country and elsewhere. So he'll still be a target, but maybe not as easy a target as his father.
And he told you, Alex told you that he plans on being more political than his father. Like he might lean into the politics even more somehow.
Yeah, it's an interesting comment on his part, because especially people on the right will say, how can you be more political than George Soros? But what people don't understand is George Soros, frankly, has been as focused, if not more so, on Europe, Eastern Europe and elsewhere, than on our country. And as much as he gets all the criticism for installing district attorneys, progressive district attorneys around the country, he's been much more focused elsewhere, whereas his son, Alex, is more political in that he's more involved in our system and in electing different officials, meeting with people, pushing for various causes. Some of it just sort of on the ground work that he's done, revving up the vote, getting out the vote, appealing to Black voters, appealing to Latino voters. That's more important to Alex than to his father. So in that regard, he actually is more political, more involved in our domestic politics. And yes, that will likely make Alex a bit of a target in our country.
Oh, that's interesting. So he'll be more focused on the United States than his father was, even though just if you looked at all the criticism, you'd think George Soros was already really focused on the United States.
George gets a lot of criticism for the impact he's had on our country, but his focus hasn't been specific to our country. It's been kind of broader. But Alex, yeah, he's got more of an interest in rolling up his sleeves and working with politicians in this country in terms of voter turnout and trying to shift the pitch, the way Democrats pitch themselves to voters. And he thinks that they're not doing a great job of emphasizing some of the positives of this country. And he also thinks that I don't think one wants to typecast him necessarily as a traditional liberal or progressive. He thinks, for example, that maybe judges should have more leeway in terms of bail, setting bail in the United States. And that's something that I think progressives and liberals will disagree with. So, and in terms of free speech, Alex is a big fan.
Is there a comparable figure, a comparable organization or figure to the Soros Foundation on the right? Would it be like the Koch brothers?
It's a good question. The Koch brothers have been have played a really important role in terms of backing Republican candidates for years. You've got the Federalist Society, which is hugely important. And frankly, they've got billions behind them as well. So those on the right are quick to criticize all the money that the Soroses throw around and use to influence our political system. And I'm not comfortable with that. I don't think others are as well. But there are billions on the other side, too. There's the Mercer family, too, that has for years. They're also a hedge fund family from Wall Street, made their money on Wall Street. The Mercer family also for years has used their largesse to help Republican politicians. So there are billions on both sides of the party aisle.
One thing I've been thinking about a lot is one of George Soros's sort of like driving causes, bigger causes, is open societies and democracies. But now he's engendered or he's engineered the succession, putting his son in charge of a $25 billion foundation. How is this? This is dynastic. This is the opposite of democracy and open society, right? I mean, what would they say about that?
Yeah, there have always been some contradictions when it comes to George Soros. I mean, he's an unbridled capitalist, a speculator. That's how he made his billions. And yet he spends his largesse on helping underprivileged. Gender equality is important. Economic equality. So there always have been some contradictions when it comes to George Soros. And yes, he himself said he didn't want to hand the reins over to his son. That wasn't his intention. And yet he has. So even he will acknowledge the contradictions and how it's not necessarily the ideal state. And yet he's done it.
It's hard to say just how much of an impact the succession will have. As long as George Soros is around, his shadow will loom over his son.
I do think that we need to wait to see the true influence because people close to the situation, people who work there, kind of say that until George Soros is truly steps back and frankly, maybe no longer with us on this earth, he's 92 mm-hmm. years old, until then, we're not really going to see where Alex takes this foundation. So you've got the shadow of a 92-year-old father over you and still involved and still pretty sharp and active and influential. So until George truly takes a step back and maybe is no longer with us on this earth, we may not see the true influence and direction that Alex takes this important foundation.
I'm still really struck that this 37-year-old man now gets to wield this power that the foundation and the super PAC have. I mean, they have huge influence, as you've already outlined. I mean, what does this say about the way American politics, power, influence is wielded? Like, what is the takeaway from all this, do you think?
Well, the takeaway is that as much as many of us would prefer wealthy individuals, those who made money speculating on markets, to have less influence over us all in terms of our political system, our elected officials, and other kinds of aspects of our life, it's going to continue. So in the words of Alex Soros, well, if the other side is going to keep spending money to influence politics and the world, we need to also, we meaning the Soros family, but Democrats. So yeah, the money behind the Democratic Party is more important than ever. Sadly, it seems there's no end in sight to the importance of billionaires in both parties. And as much as both parties talk about getting away from that kind of system, that reliance on these billionaires and in their influence continues apace. And Alex's ascension and his succession at this empire suggests that there's no end in sight.
Thank you so much for coming on.
Sure.
Gregory Zuckerman is a special writer at the Wall Street Journal. And that's it for our show today. What Next TBD is produced by Evan Campbell and Patrick Fort. Our show is edited by Jonathan Fisher. Alicia Montgomery is Vice President of Audio for Slate. TBD is part of the larger What Next family. TBD is also part of Future Tense, a partnership of Slate, Arizona State University, and New America. If you're a fan of the show, I have a request for you. Become a Slate Plus member. Just head on over to slate.com/whatnextplus to sign up. We'll be back next week with more episodes. I'm Emily Peck, filling in for Lizzie O'Leary. And you can catch me on Saturdays over at Slate Money. Thanks for listening.
Okay, round two. Name something that's not boring.
A laundry? Ooh, a book club. Computer solitaire, huh?
Ah, oh, sorry. We were looking for Chumba Casino. That's right. Chumbacasino.com has over 100 casino-style games. Join today and play for free for your chance to redeem some serious prizes. Chumbacasino.com. No purchase necessary. Void where prohibited by law. 18 plus. Terms and conditions apply. See website for details.